One of the things that we've said in our study of Revelation is that it's very helpful, in fact, we might say necessary, to go back in times and look at the Old Testament. John, throughout the book of Revelation, goes back to the Old Testament time and time again. And now we're in a section of Revelation where we see this taking place in a really important way. Beginning with Revelation 14, then Revelation 16, and Revelation 17, Revelation 18, Revelation 19, this later stretch in the book. He talks about Babylon. When we were back in Revelation chapter 14, gave a couple handouts on Babylon, and we're not going to go through all that. I have typically summarized Babylon as false religion, because as you look at it, John also describes it as one of the beasts in Revelation 13. He refers to it as Babylon, obviously. He describes it as the harlot in Revelation 17. And we're also going to see here in Revelation 19 shortly that he's going to describe it as a false prophet. So there are multiple descriptions for Babylon. As you go back in the Old Testament and you read about Babylon, was it a nation that was friendly to God's people or not so friendly? I mean, they put Israel in captivity for a while. And when you go back and you look at some of the things that Babylon did, and we'll look at a couple passages, you will begin to see, I think, why John was able to use that symbol. Babylon back in ancient times, he was talking about literal Babylon. You can find that in the map. But John is using Babylon in a figurative sense, a non-literal sense, to communicate several things to God's people. Now, as we go through Revelation 18, there are going to be multiple references to Babylon. And a lot of this goes back to the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah 50, verses chapters 50 and 51. And we'll see, we'll probably not run all these, but I'll give you a couple initially just to see the parallels. Let's head somebody back there to Jeremiah 50 and Jeremiah 51. Somebody want to take care of that in just a second? All right, Steve, Jeremiah 50 and Jeremiah 51. And as you look at Revelation 18, you'll find that there are at least a dozen, at least 12 direct allusions to what we find here in Jeremiah 50. Let's get a couple helpers for Revelation 18. You should already be there, Revelation 18. We'll look at verse 1 and then have Steve compare that with Jeremiah 50. Steve, you want to take that? Okay, Steve and Steve. Let's start with Revelation 18:1, and then Steve 2. We'll have you, Steve, in the back, read Jeremiah 50, verse 41.
After all these things, I saw another angel coming down out of heaven, having great authority, and the earth was lightened with its glory.
Okay, Steve, you want to take a look at Jeremiah 50, verse 4, 41? Jeremiah 50, verse 41. Okay, something didn't line up there. I don't know. I think I had the wrong verse. I checked that before class. Let's try another one. Verse 4, Steve. And then Steve, we'll ask you to pick up Steve Saylor, Jeremiah 51, verse 6.
Revelation 18:4.
Yeah.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come forth, my people, out of her, that ye have no fellowship with her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues.
Okay, and Steve? Jeremiah 51:6.
Flee from the midst of Babylon, and everyone save his life. Do not be cut off from her iniquity. For this is the time of the Lord's vengeance.
Okay, come out of her, Revelation 18, and then back there in Jeremiah 51, what's he say? Time to leave Babylon. It's basically the same thing. And you can go through the chapter, and this may be something that you want to do a little later. Read Jeremiah 50, read Jeremiah 51, and then come back and read Revelation 18, because you'll begin to see parallel after parallel. We'll also see some parallels as we look at some things from Isaiah. All right, having offered a little introduction, let's look at Revelation 18, verses 1 and 2. After these things, I saw another angel coming down out of heaven, having great authority, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried with a mighty voice, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon. That's why we talked about Babylon for a couple minutes, the great. And she has become a habitation of demons, and a hold of every unclean spirit, and a hold or a place of every unclean and hateful bird. Now when you hear somebody say, well, after these things, what does that kind of take you back to? What was just discussed, doesn't it? So he says, after these things, where would that point you back to? Well, probably Revelation 17. If we go back to Revelation 17, remember what we've got? We've got information about Babylon. We've got information in Revelation chapter 17 about civil government. looking to false religion and saying, come on board with us. We'll submit to your authority. And we've said that that could take place throughout time. I also think that we probably will see that, not necessarily in our lifetime, but based on some things that we've discussed, some things that we'll touch base on again, that very well could take place in the future at some point. And to the degree that that's going to happen, if that indeed is what's going to occur, that's only going to be known to God. But eventually, that partnership between false religion, evil civil government, Revelation 17:16, describes it as coming apart. He says, in the 10 horns, there's that evil civil power, which thou sawest, and the beast. These shall do what to the harlot or Babylon? They're going to hate her. And not only do they hate her, what else do they do?
Eat her flesh.
Eat her flesh. They seek to destroy her. So sometimes, as we said today, people will partner. They'll come together for a while. We gave the illustration of a relationship, maybe marriage. Person says, oh, I've got to have him. I've got to have her. This is the one for me. And yet after a year, 2 years, or 10 years, sometimes 30 or 40 years, what's a person do? I can't stand you. I wish you were dead. Well, that's really the kind of thing that we read about here. Then over in Revelation chapter 19, which we'll not get to for a little while, John continues to talk about these same subjects. But here as we look at Revelation chapter 18, John says he got some additional information. And as you study about where this information came from, it's very interesting. Number one, he says the information came from where? It came from? Well, okay, it did come from there. But as we look at that first verse, anything before that? All right, we've got another angel. Series of angels are introduced here. And this one may be completely new. We're not exactly sure about that. But we do know what's said about this angel. The text tells us he had great authority. Now, that's unusual. This is the only time I can find in the Bible where an angel is associated with the idea of having great authority. When you look at what they've done, what they can do, we do know that they have some pretty impressive powers. But in this particular case, and even just saying that an angel has authority, when he has great authority, that seems to really stand out. Now, we're not told if that authority was temporary. We're not told if the authority was permanent. Maybe this was just temporary to convey this message. We don't know. But that just kind of is one of the indicators that this is very important information. Then we also have the statement that Betty made. He's also pictured as coming down out of heaven. Maybe that's an indication to say, once again, that this is something that is really important. It is a key point. Then as we continue to read about this angel, something else catches our attention. As he comes down, what does the text say?
The earth
was lit up. Now, can you imagine that? I mean, if you look from space, you can find places like Las Vegas. Up there from space, you got this area land, and you can see all the lights. But can you imagine the power that would be involved in an angel lighting up the whole earth? That's pretty impressive. Well, the question again becomes, why? John seems to be building a pattern here. You've got this angel, he's coming down from heaven, he's got great authority, and now he lights up the earth. If you think back to the book of Exodus, and Paul references this to some degree in the 2 Corinthians letter, but Exodus 34 verses 29 through 30, or Exodus 34 verses 29 to 31. You remember what happened? Moses, he goes up on the mountain. And when he comes back to the people, anything different about him? Yeah. You know, people don't want to look on him because there is that glowing face. Well, if that's the background, remember, as I said, John uses a lot of imagery from the Old Testament. If that's the background here, you've got this angel and his presence is able to light up the whole earth. That might, based on Exodus 34, tell us what about it. Where's he just been? All right, just been in the presence of God. Now, somebody could argue, well, angels are always in the presence of God. Okay, I grant that. But here again, there's something very specific, something very impressive. And we begin to see, as we develop the thought in verse 1, why this was so impressive, so important, when we began to look at the information in verse 2. Now, if the explanation that I have advanced thus far is correct, and we're going to be consistent whether we're right or wrong in this through the rest of the book, but we've talked before about various times, but especially at some point prior to the Lord's return, and we're not trying to predict when he's going to come back, but we've given, and this is true in the Wednesday night class as well, some information about, remember the time of Noah? How godless things were, and people were not really focused on spiritual things. If that's also going to, in some respects, be something that occurs prior to Jesus' next and final return, then it is going to be a very, very significant event. And that would make sense to me to use such a distinctive angel to make this announcement that Babylon, false religion, has fallen. And that's what he says. As you look at that second verse, it says he cried, he spoke. With what kind of voice? Mighty voice. Once again, it's telling us that this is a very, very significant message. His subject is Babylon. And what's he say about Babylon? He says it's fallen. Now somebody can come up today and say, the shop's closing. Well, okay, we understand what that means. But if somebody comes up and says, the shop is closing, the shop is closing, that's a little unusual. We wouldn't expect to hear it twice. So once again, it's a way of saying it's doubled. It's a way of telling us that this message is extremely important. Then it could also be an affirmation that this is actually going to occur. And then, too, I think you have to bear this in mind. Let's go back to Revelation 17 for just a second. This chapter also talks about Babylon, the harlot, the different designations for the same power, the second beast back in Revelation 13. But let's see how it's described again from Revelation 17. And there came one of the seven angels that had the seven bowls, this is starting in 17:1, and spake with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the judgment of what kind of harlot? This is the great harlot. And where does she sit? She sits on many waters. With whom? Who's she been involved with? The kings of the earth, various government. They committed fornication with her, made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And it carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy. And here again, you've got this Babylon or false religion pictured, having seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman, how was she clothed? She's got the best, doesn't she? Purple, that color of royalty this day and time, and she's decked out in gold. She's got pearls. She has precious stone, having in her head or in her hand a golden cup full of abominations. And then you have there in verse 5 once again. Here it is. It's Babylon. It's the mother of the harlots. She's great. She is kind of the ruler of the world, if you will. Then down in verse 15, and he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, that goes back to what we just said, she sits so many waters, where the harlot sits, their peoples, plural, multitudes, plural, and nations and tongues. Back in 17, when John talks about this harlot, Babylon, false religion, how much power, authority, and glory does she have? She's queen of the hill, isn't it? That the picture? And now as you look at Revelation 18, what's the picture? Babylon, the queen of the hill. She's... Have you ever seen a company where you said, oh, they're going to be around forever? Or you've seen some retirees, they were getting benefits. I think IBM made the news this past week. They're going to start trying to change their employee plans. For the IBM employees, I think they probably had the idea, we're set for life. IBM is so big, nobody's ever going to be able to bring it down. And for us, imagine somebody says, well, Walmart one day is going to fall. Not going to be a single Walmart store left in the United States. They're going to be turned to ashes, turned to dust. I think for a lot of us, we can say, well, we just can't imagine that. Now, maybe they'll consolidate. Maybe they'll be limited to the southern part of the United States or another section. But the idea that Walmart is going to be replaced by another company, we can't envision that. Well, here's something that's far, far greater. And John says that this special angel came down. He's got this authority. And it's fallen. Anything that you want to add or ask before we go a little deeper into this? Okay, let's head back to the Old Testament. And I'm going to ask you to pick up two passages from the book of Isaiah. The first comes from Isaiah 21. Then the second is going to come from Isaiah 13. Jeremiah had a lot to say about Babylon, the Babylon of his day. John used that, Jeremiah 15:51. But Isaiah also spoke about Babylon. He was familiar with this power as well. And John goes back and draws from that, but John applies the information in a different way. Now before we have that read, and who wants to take care of that in just a minute? First one, all right, Bonnie, and then Steve will ask you to pick up from the second reference. That's going to be from Isaiah 13. Bear in mind what John says, and we'll talk about this a little more. He cried with a mighty voice, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and has become a habitation of demons, and a hold of every unclean spirit, and a hold or a place of every unclean and hateful bird. Okay, let's pick up that first reference, 21:9. Okay, now that sounds a lot like Revelation 18, verse 1, doesn't it? It's fallen. It's fallen. But then, as you continue to read there in Isaiah 13, what else do you read? Let's go back over that one more time. I want you to see the connection. If you would.
And behold, here cometh a chariot of men with a couple of horsemen. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her God.
There it is. Let's just stop you right there. All her graven images. Well, what do you use graven images for? And in this case, false religion, right? So that's why I said, when you look at Babylon, you've got to see that there is a connection with false religion. Isaiah comes right out and makes it. But we see that in other parts of the Bible as well, one of which would be Jeremiah 50 and Jeremiah 51. Okay, and as this fallen state occurs, John describes it in really eerie terms. He gives us a very dismal picture of it as far as a place of demons to hold for every unclean bird and spirit and so forth. As I look at this, and to advance a little bit on the explanation that we've given thus far, if you have a world, our world, in a state that the mind of people is so secular, so godless, so focused on self, so uninterested in God, is it going to be, in some respects, like a desolate place? You know, religion, it's over there in the trash heap. Nobody's interested in it anymore. You know, you don't have a need for church buildings. And again, that's not to say that it's going to be 100%. But it begins to picture a reversal of what we saw over there in Revelation chapter 17. False religion for time, king of the hill. It's got wealth, it's got power, it's got influence. Evil civil government wants to partner with it. But John says, and again, I think there have probably been repeated times throughout history where this has happened. But we're also going to see here shortly that this also seems to be something that's going to occur in our future. It's a complete reversal of the power and so forth. And as I mentioned, you think about the pagan gods, specifically mentioned in Isaiah chapter 21, and also Isaiah 13, verses 19 through 22. Steve, if you'll pick that up now. That's Steve Saylor. Okay, now let's stop right there for just a second. God, talking about Babylon, and again, that was the literal Babylon, well before John's day and time. He said it's going to be overthrown and overthrown in what kind of way? It's going to be like Sodom. It's going to be like Gomorrah. Well, isn't that the picture that you have here in Revelation 18? It's going to be that eerie place. It's going to be like an unpleasant graveyard. Nobody's going to want to go out there and be a part. You know, people are going to forsake it. All right, let's continue the reading. So, again, many different pictures to say that people, this is just a very undesirable place. And false religion, and how God's going to fulfill that exactly, when he's going to fulfill that, I do not know. But this seems to be the point that John is making. And not only does he make it here, he makes it two more times in this chapter. He uses, though, different imagery. If you skip down halfway, Revelation 18, verse 14, he says, and the fruits which after thy soul lusted, this again, false religion, Babylon that he's talking about. He said, there are some things that you wanted. He says, what's happened to them? They're gone, stripped. And all things that were dainty and sumptuous are perished. One more picture of how bad things are going to be. And then as you look down towards the end of the chapter, verse 23, we'll talk a little bit more about this, but at least you can kind of begin to see how this fits in as well. And he says, and the light of a lamp shall shine, what? No more. When you think about false religion, would you say that it offers any light to the world at all? I mean, it's obviously false. It's not doing things in quite the way that God has described. But is there any light at all from false religion?
Temporarily.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to say, don't kill somebody. Well, okay, most religions would say that. And that's some light. I mean, that's a whole lot better than the secular environment that says we've descended from apes and the survival of the fittest is the one that needs to survive. What about in business dealings? Be honest. A lot of false religions teach that. But here, as John talks about that, as he talks about the destruction of false religion, and even though there is some light there, he says, and the light of a lamp shall do what? It's not going to shine anymore. So even though there had been or will be some light from false religion, John says, time for lights out. And it's one more way to describe the desolation that we see pictured here in Revelation 18, verse 2. Now, I wonder a little bit, and I can't prove this, and this is something that you may, maybe just a little fodder for thought. But when you think about Satan, when you look at true religion, is he very comfortable with that?
I'm sure he's not.
Okay, we know that to be the case. Remember, resist the devil. Well, if you're resisting the devil, what are you doing when it comes to religion? You're following what's right, are you not? Resist the devil, and what's he going to do? He's going to flee from you. He doesn't like the light. Satan likes the darkness. Okay, well, let's take that and see if we can logically and do some implication here. If he doesn't like the light, if he's uncomfortable with that, what about with false religion? Well, he's willing to use that, isn't he? I mean, he said to Jesus, worship me. I'll give you all these things. So false religion, he can get by with that. But if you had to make a guess about Satan, what environment do you think for him is the ideal environment? It's obviously not pure religion, pure and undefiled religion that James talked about. He doesn't want that. Satan, if he can have an ideal environment, what would it be? Is there an environment that would be true? But is there one that might even be better than that? Okay. What about no religion at all? If you can completely strip any idea of God out of the minds of most people, and you can get them down to where you have a completely secular society, which is pretty much what we have in the time of the flood in Genesis chapter 6. That would seem to me to be the ideal environment. Now somebody says, well, Brad, you know, I'm just not sure about all this stuff. Skip over a chapter, Revelation 20. As we continue, we've not spent a lot of time here because we're trying to go through this sequentially. It seems to me, and these are difficult verses, just as we're in a hard section of the book now. But I think what we find in Revelation 20 helps tie together some of the things that we've been talking about. We'll start with verses 1 through 3 and then pick up with 7 and 8. And I saw an angel coming down out of heaven, having the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, the old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Now, we've talked about this 1,000-year period before, and we can demonstrate it in different ways. If we say we have 10 fingers, and I know I've got a couple thumbs, but 10 fingers, what are we saying with that number 10? These are all right, completeness. Somebody says, I've told you, not 10 times, but I've told you 100 times. Now what are they saying by the word 100? You've been told more than enough. And then somebody says, I've told you 1,000 times. When we get to that number 1,000, which is one of the multiples of 10, what are we saying, biblically? 1,000. Remember we gave this illustration from the Old Testament. God says, the cattle on how many hills are mine? 1,000 hills. Well, we asked the question way back when. I'll ask the question again. What about hill 1,001? Cows up there belong to somebody else? No. God says the cattle on 1,000 hills are mine. To make what point? They're all mine. 1,000 is, in the Bible, a number to express completeness, just like 10. But it's a multiple of 10, so it's saying completeness in the absolutely fullest sense. So when he talks about the 1,000 years, anybody remember how we have defined that word in previous classes? 1,000 years is just another description for the Christian era. Day of Pentecost to the end of time. All right, now if that's true, he says, let's start with 2 again. Kind of got off track there for a second. And he laid hold on the dragon, the old serpent, which is the devil and Satan. He bound him for 1,000 years. And cast him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him that he should not deceive the nations no more until the 1,000 years should be finished. Now somebody says, well, if the 1,000 years describe the Christian era, what's supposed to happen at the end of the Christian era? Well, I was thinking in terms of other biblical passages. At the end of the Christian era, what's supposed to happen? Jesus comes back, right? You've got the judgment. So it wouldn't make any sense, literally, for John to say, you get to the end of the Christian era, Satan's going to deceive people for a while, and then we're going to have the judgment. If we're trying to understand this too literally. But the point seems to be that somewhere towards the end of the Christian era, the devil is going to be loosed. And that's what he means by the end of verse 3, until the 1,000 years be finished. After this, he's got to be loosed for how long? A little time. A little while. Well, this seems, and we'll pick up with 7 and 8 in just a minute, but this seems to be consistent with what we've described thus far. You have a situation where the world continues, and yet John in Revelation 17 and 18 talks about the downfall of especially false religion. And if you do that, what kind of world are you going to have? Religion basically disappears. The light goes out. You're going to have people who are thinking about themselves, people who are not focused on God. You're going to have a very secular society. And that seems to be parallel with what John says in Revelation 23. The devil's got to be loose for a little while. Why? To have that perfect environment, to wreak havoc, and to have kind of one last stand, if you will. And then 7 and 8. And when the 1,000 years are finished, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. And he shall come forth to deceive the nations which are at the four corners of the earth. Now when somebody says the four winds are the four corners of the earth, how universal are they being? I mean, somebody's saying in north, south, east, and west. So, as I said, when we get into Revelation 20, we'll talk about this a little bit more. But 23, 27, and 8, these also seem to be cross-references for the line of thought that I'm laying out. And I could be wrong, but it seems to be a pretty consistent message from John as far as some of the things that, as far as I can tell, will take place in the future. Now that, again, I do want to underscore, I'm not predicting the end of time. I do not want to be understood to say, well, I don't think the world is like this, so Brad believes that the end of the world can't come today. We don't know what's going to be, but there does seem to be at least this state of the world that will happen sometime before the Lord returns. Don?
How do you address the statement that he's thrown in the abyss?
Okay, we're in 20 then, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So he might not deceive the nations any longer. How do you address that? Would that be the absence of the devil?
Okay.
That might. Would we expect a point where we have no temptations to sin?
Okay. I should have brought out the board today. But if you think about Satan being bound for 1,000 years, I would understand that to describe the day of Pentecost throughout the better part of the Christian era. And by being bound, his activities are in many ways restricted. For example, when you think about 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, Paul says there's no temptation which is taken you, but such as man can bear. God is going to provide a way out. The devil is under some restrictions right now. Jesus talked about in Matthew 12 in the teaching about the strong man. You know, the stronger fellow comes. In that case, a stronger person is Christ, and he's able to bind the devil. You know, Paul talked about Colossians 2, Ephesians 2, powers, satanic powers being restricted, reduced. So there seems to be, and you know, you've got the binding in Revelation chapter 20. Satan is under some restrictions right now. But there appears to be, as I understand things, a time, sometime before the Lord returns, where the Lord lifts at least some of those restrictions. Now, I don't think that that's going to be to the point where you have demon possession again, because there'd have to be something on the flip side, in that case, something miraculous to deal with that. But Satan appears to, at some future point, be given more authority to go out, or more activity. Maybe more of his helpers will be released to inflict greater damage on people as far as an interest in sin. You know, when you look at society, there are times where it seems like people have been fairly moral, and other times where it just seems like they cast off all restraint. And that lack of restraint seems to be what's pictured here. Satan's going to be adding fuel to the fire, if you will, in various ways, not miraculous ways, but doing all he can to make sure that the world is as godless as it can be. Yes, I'm thinking along the same lines, that there are restrictions right now as far as exactly what he can do as far as deceit. Maybe the Bible will become less available. Maybe there will be some rules that will somehow restrict what religious groups can do. I don't know, but there does seem to be a lessening of the restrictions that are on him, and there seems to be greater power or greater abilities that he is allowed to use. But again, you would stop short of the miraculous, because that would put us into a different category. Ray?
As far as the devil being restricted in things, he doesn't have the power, of course, that he used to have years ago.
Right.
But we have that power over him, but we can give that power back to him.
Yes.
At that point, he still has power, but only if we allow him to have that power.
And I think that's a good way to describe it as far as giving back. People can surrender something sometimes, but if that's returned, in this case, returned to someone who's evil, then that helps advance their agenda and their powers and so forth. And that could answer a lot of that, that people just decide to relinquish a lot of the things that they possess. Freedom, same kind of thing. You know, people say, we've got it, and gradually they surrender it, and then lo and behold, they're slaves again. So that's an excellent thought that I wrote down. Anybody else? Okay, let's make a couple of other points here. Some people, as they look at Revelation 18, and they see the second verse, they say, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. It's become a habitation of demons. It's completely gone. Well, this is another example of where when you read the book of Revelation, you want to be careful. You want to use a lot of caution as far as trying to over-literalize things. And you just need to pay attention, I think, to some of the passages as well. If you look at this too literally, does it sound like Babylon, false religion, has already been destroyed? It kind of does. But if we look at John's life and writings, we know that's not the case, right? Remember 1 John 4, verse 1? Apparently a book written later in his life. We know that many false prophets are out there in the world. And then back there in 1 John 2, verse 18, he says there are many antichrists in the world. With those additional two references, we could not and would not certainly want to conclude that false religion had been overthrown in his day and time. Now, I mentioned Revelation 20, verses 3 and 7. We've talked about some other passages as well, especially in Wednesday night class. We know, and I've mentioned before, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 17, Paul says, when the Lord returns, the righteous that are living are going to be caught up in the air. So, whatever this state of chaos is, you know, we sometimes speak with universal affirmatives. Everybody's going to go. Nobody was there. Well, that's not literally true. You still had 10 people there, and you still had a few friends that didn't show up at this particular event. But when you have the vast majority of people involved in something or not involved in something, you find these general statements. And here, if you're looking at a very small amount of people who are righteous, and that's what we talked about from Luke 18:8. Remember, Jesus says when he returns, is he going to find faith, literally the faith on the earth? Well, that doesn't sound like there are going to be a lot of people who are really trying to pursue God and do what's right. And then, too, I want to give you this example. We didn't tie this in from the Matthew 24 class. We're a little past it. But Matthew 24, looking at verses 44 through 46. I'll start in 43. He's still talking about his end of time coming there at the end of Matthew 24. He says this, but know this, that if the master of the house had known in what watch the thief was coming, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken through. Therefore be ye also ready, for in an hour that ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is the faithful and wise steward whom his Lord hath set over his household to give them their food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find him so doing. And then you see in verse 48, but if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord tarries, and then he's going to begin to beat the other servants and have fellowship with the drunken and so forth, there seems to be, it may even be a secondary or sub-point below that. But as you think about that, here you've got servants pictured in connection with Jesus' next and final coming. And then he says there are going to be some servants that are fall into the evil category. You know, it's one thing for people not to be that interested in religion. But if people are living in that kind of secular environment, do you think that's going to have some effect on God's people? Yeah. And here you have the servant. Apparently, this evil servant started out on the right road. But then he begins to see the Lord hasn't come. And there are these other people out there in the world. And that thinking begins to affect his thinking. And if you begin to have defections among God's people as well, then what Ray said as far as giving back that power to Satan and so forth, that seems to be an excellent explanation of what's going to happen. Now, I say the next little piece here before we pick up with verses 3 and 5, to give you an illustration, not to say that we're in the end of time or that we're going to face that sometime within our lifetime or anything else. But about a week ago, read an interesting article, came across it by chance, that was entitled, We Are Raising a Nation of Savages. Now, as you look at our day and time, and this has happened throughout different times of human history, I'm not saying that this is the only example of it, But just as kind of an indication of where we are. There was a story, three teen boys were charged with gunning down a 22-year-old athlete. They didn't know. We probably all saw that story. It's kind of dropped off the news radar screen right now. Then there was another one, a second one, that dealt with a 17-year-old who allegedly used a bow and arrow to shoot some kittens. Anybody see that? Okay, a few of us saw that one as well. And then the other one was, I mean, these two were not good, but the other one was really, really bad. The third talked about two teenagers. They were accused of murdering a young mother and killing a 13-year-old baby. The mother was out there with her child, you know, strolling with the baby, and they came up, demanded cash from her, and that altercation led into the death of this lady and her child. When we look at the situation that we're in right now, it is not good. Anybody see the story the other day about the military, the Air Force, and homosexuality? There was a guy who professed to be a Christian and was basically told, you're out of luck. You just got to, you know, shut down your beliefs. There are a lot of indications that we're heading towards a more and more progressive, a lot more secular society. And I say this just to make this point. Once you start heading people in a certain direction, it's very, very easy for that direction to pick up speed, especially if you're headed down a bad way. And as you start picking up that effect, you can sweep some Christians into that. You know, Teresa and I grew up with some people who professed to be Christians, and they got through some university training and through some friendships, you know, they got on board. They still professed to be Christians, but they got on board with homosexuality and some other things. And you're thinking, well, where's your thinking process? But it goes back to, well, you've got to be more loving and tolerant, and you've got to be more considerate of people and accepting of folks. But it's a very, very bad thing for a nation to start that moral slide, and it just gets into some bad places.
Which, you know, is so, right now, a lot of things, you know, when you get older and you look back and you see the new things that are coming along, it's so important for young families to really make sure they teach their children at home.
Yeah.
Because they're not being taught all the moral things that they God's way in school anymore. They really need to be vigilant to teach them at home.
Yeah. Two or three religious services a week are not enough. Because kids are just with the internet, and, you know, Ray and I were talking the other day, yesterday at the work day, and we don't have a congregational Facebook page, but I don't think it's any secret. Some congregations that do, they have people, members, that post some things on there. You know, they're out there with their, you know, beer can on the beach and, you know, half naked and some other things. If you've got people who profess to be Christians involved in that kind of activity, where do you think the non-Christians typically are going to be? I mean, they're even further down the moral slide. So sometimes God's people can contribute to that or at least be involved with that. And it really needs to be taught, and it needs to be taught on a regular basis. And parents need to be a good job, do a good job of policing, you know, whether that is child discipline or whether that's instruction in moral and doctrinal things. And then what is available through the church to use that as well. Anybody else? Okay. Bessie?
I'm going to say one thing about the Jehovah's Witnesses. They demand, they get their families together once a week and go over the lessons for Sunday. And then, well, they do for the Tuesday night. But the little children, they all participate together. And the little children are allowed to answer questions too and encouraged if they're just 2 years old and can say yes or no, something like that. And I admire them.
What do you think about Deuteronomy 6?
Yeah.
God says, in essence, you teach them at every opportunity. When they're getting up, when they're going to bed, throughout the day. Because even in that day and time, I mean, they lived in a very bad world. When you look at some of the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, and so forth, and God's people, there was always that pull from the world to become involved with those things. And there were times where Israel got sucked into it. And the devil's been doing that for a long time. So our world is not a good place, but it does seem that there will be a time when things may be a whole lot worse than what they are now. And the direction that we're going is certainly not good, and kids need to be braced for that. They need to be steeled for that.
You know, when you think about how many small children we have here, and then you go look into these community churches and places yeah. like that, all those kids that they have, look what our group of little kids, look what they have to look forward to in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Yeah, it is. And if you're putting kids into the public school system, you look at some of the things. There was a big news article, I'd referenced it a couple of weeks ago, as far as math. you know, 4 times 3, that's 10. If that's the number that you come up with, well, that's just fine. Be able to tell us how you got there, and as long as you can do that, we're good. But it's just, you can't have a world like that where people begin to reject absolutes, but adults do the same kind of thing, at least in some respects. And society cannot function well unless people have some clear standards. And in this case, they come from God.
Brent, one thing that the professor brought out to my son, Kevin, when he was looking into putting his two stepchildren in school here in Goshen, and he told him, said, you won't have near as much problem a family won't when they are Christian, Bible-based, studying at home. And so, fortunately, John Kevin held that, and
Well, there are ways. I mean, God has given us various tools, but a lot of times people will either not use the tools or they'll not use them as fully or as effectively as they could. But the things that are available, they need to be used, and they need to be used on a regular basis because you get only one shot with kids typically. And if you miss out on those formative years, you can't go back and reclaim them. Okay, let's at least read Revelation 19, verses 3 through 5. We've kind of got now a good foundation for that. With what we've said about the first few verses in Revelation 20. For by the wine of the wrath of fornication, all the nations are fallen, and the kings of the earth committed fornication with her. Still, we're talking about Babylon, a false religion. And the merchants of the earth waxed rich by the power of her wantonness. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come forth, my people, out of her. Well, isn't that interesting? Talking about false religion, and God says, hey, if you're my folks, where do you need to leave? False religion. You can't be involved with that kind of stuff. And there are a couple of reasons for that. You don't have any right to be in fellowship with her. She's involved with sin. And some plagues are going to fall upon her. For sins, and this is a very, very interesting expression. We're going to develop this in some detail, Lord willing, next week. For sins have done what? They have reached to heaven. Well, a thought question between now and next week. You think all sin reaches to heaven? We'll close it there.